Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe.
Universe. We were just joined by my brother, Scott Samuel Michael, there on the drums for our musical opener. All right. You are joining us now at Main Street Universe, a show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. I'd like to start right off from introducing our co-host, all the way from the Temple of Gaia, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Hello, hello.
Kevin Baird is a psychic medium, intuitive consultant. He can be found at www.templeofgaia.com or the stores Crystalis in Herndon or Sticks and Stones in Fairfax. So, any interesting developments going on, Reverend Scott Samuel Michael?
Interesting developments. Well, depends on what your interest is, I guess.
But we're talking about exorcism today. Any thoughts on exorcism? Well, yeah, I you know, exorcism, you know, as I'm sure you're going to get into, is kind of very misunderstood in many ways, but I think it's interesting that the notion of exorcism continues to be something that people explore and consider valid, you know, even in supposedly scientific times. And I think perhaps it's an expression that there's a lot more mystery in the universe than we do know, or maybe we could ever know, at least know fully. So it's an interesting thing.
For those of you that don't know, by the way, Reverend Scott Samuel Michael is a reverend, a minister of a Unitarian Universalist Church here in Accotink, Burke, Virginia. And I would now like to say hello to our eye in the sky, Mr. Brett Hillman. Are you there, Brett? Brett, I think his mic might be off.
Okay.
Are you there,
hello?
Brett? Oh, there he is. Okay.
Hello. Yeah, I'm experiencing very technical issues today, so if I'm using a different computer due to some major laptop problems. So if you guys can't hear me, that's probably why. I have my notes ready to go, so I will be ready to give our weekly report.
All right.
Good. And, you know, I woke up this morning and had a virus, so maybe doing this either solar flares or maybe doing this report on exorcism has something to do with it. Because as I was looking it up last night, my computer shut off. So that was kind of
fun.
So is antivirus software on computers like actually an exorcism software?
Ooh, it could be. Driving out the negative forces. All right, but anyway, I'm going to get started now on our topic. So sometime a little later today, Brett will be bringing us our Eye in the Sky astrological report. Okay, exorcism. The dictionary definition of exorcism is as follows. To expel an evil spirit by adjuration, to get rid of something troublesome, menacing, or oppressive. Now, this is a very powerful thing, a very provocative thing. We here, the host of this talk show, the three of us, Brett, Kevin, and I, anyway, identify ourselves as pagan. I've been in a conversation with a few evangelical or fundamentalist Christian folks recently who have asked me, aren't you guys afraid that if you're involving yourself in divinations and casting spells and all of this, aren't you afraid of being attacked by evil spirits or demons? So it is a conversation I've been in real life recently, so I thought I would answer it a little bit on this show. And this is a very legitimate question, a big fear for a lot of people, and it was asked in kindness and concern. So we'll get started here by saying this. There are, and I believe there are, negative, harmful forces out there in the universe. Most people I know think of me, if they know me, as a positive metaphysical practitioner who does light work and believes in law of attraction aspects and living your life in that way. I as well obey the harm none clause of the Wiccan Reed, as I understand it. Let's not make this a Wiccan Reed debate today, folks. We're talking about exorcism. Every time you bring that up, Wiccans will start arguing all over the place. I say, as I understand it.
Another show.
Yeah, another show. For those unaware of this clause, though, I will state it in short form. It is by the Wiccan Reed you must, in perfect love, in perfect trust. 8 words the Wiccan Reed fulfill, and it harm none, do what ye will. In short, many witches follow this read as a guideline for metaphysical practice. We believe we should never consciously intend harm on another individual using magic. Many advanced practitioners will agree with me here that to use magic or universal forces, whatever you're comfortable saying, is actually, in a harmful way, is unproductive and just plain unnecessary. You should be focusing instead on your own progress and not on your sense of feeling angry or victimized by someone. When you use the forces of the universe to hurt because you are angry, You are, in fact, invoking high-level spiritual energy to complain to the gods and to proclaim, I am a victim. So to me, it's spending extra unnecessary time with a victim mentality. As pagans, most of us believe in karma. So one of our protections against negative spirits or energy is just to be a good person and to follow the harm none calls of the reed. Now later I will discuss in a little bit more detail things that pagans do to protect themselves from negative forces. But right now, what I would like to do is explore how many different cultures around the world, different religions, spiritual practices, deal with the issues of evil spirits, demons, negative energy, etc., etc. We will start this journey with author Edith Turner. Edith Turner is author of a book called Experiencing Ritual. Edith goes to Zambia in this book, where she spends about 4 to 5 years with the Ndembu people. She witnesses and takes part in rituals which involve medicines, drums, community, dance, and participation in an attempt to rid the afflicted or demon-possessed person of the unwanted spirit that has entered them. It is said that this evil spirit, or Bihamba, or hunter's tooth, in translation, is just that, like being bitten by a tooth of an evil spirit, and it must be extracted. First, preparation must be done. A respected medicine man, or a Mukulumpi, a village elder, is another translation of that, leads an expedition to gather proper herbs and such. This Mukulumpi is accompanied by a few people, including an apprentice medicine man in the one story she was reading. The author notes that the face of the medicine man is, quote, long-lined face, capable of unearthly flashes of irony and mischief. So as the story goes on, the party sets out equipped with the proper tools, a cloth bag, a tin can of beer, a wooden hollow hoe or rasp, a pouch made of mongoose skin, and an axe. As they walk, the medicine man begins to chant rhythmically, tapping on this hollow rasp. Makungu katu katu ye, makungu katu katu ye. This chant means, hunter spirit of the medicine tree, stand up and let go. The medicine man reaches into his mongoose skin bag where he extracts some red clay. He uses the red clay to draw lines on what is called the medicine tree. So there's some chanting. He's reaching into the clay. He's drawing lines on the tree. These lines inform the spirit, the Ihamba, that he will soon be leaving the body of the person he possesses. It's sort of a warning or a reminder of what's about to happen. So then roots, leaves, and bark, they're gathered and separated. Herbs are used, and goat's horn, drums thunder, as well as chanting, and the ritual for extracting the Ihamba ensues after everything is prepared. There's an interesting aspect to this exorcism that I felt a need to mention. And that is that the Ndembu people do in part see the root cause of this possession by an evil spirit as being the fault of or being a reality brought about by stress or strain in the community. And I'll repeat that. They believe that the person being possessed is being possessed by a demon spirit, not because of anything they have done wrong as an individual, but because the community, their little village, has a problem or something that is straining them, something they're doing wrong, perhaps some moral issue, and that the person being possessed was just highly spiritually sensitive, so that's the one that the bad spirit pounced on. So the community feels it must address this problem in order to fix this and to prevent it from occurring again. So again, the possessed person is not to be blamed. They are simply seen as more spiritually sensitive people who are, in part, victimized by the bad spirit because of societal strain. So I like that sort of different angle on possession, that it's a community issue. Now let's look at a few other belief systems and how they view possession, exorcism, demons. Just briefly here, Kabbalah. In the Jewish mystical Kabbalah, there is mention of the Dybak. It is the soul of a dead person who has possessed a living person for the purposes of finishing unfinished business. When the spirit is exorcised, it is said to exit the body through the toes. In Islam, Muslims believe in the jinn, a word that's rooted, became the word genie later on. People are familiar with King Solomon, some of you out there, and his claiming to control these jinn. But in Islam, the Muslims believe this jinn are... Go ahead, Brett.
I was going to say that the jinn, as far as Islam goes, they are spiritual beings that have free will.
Yes,
they
to some
are,
degree.
To some degree. But
because
they are... Satan, in the Islamic faith, was a jinn. He was the highest of them, and he was so high he was up to the level of an angel. And there are good jinn and there are bad jinn, and that's where we get our split today.
Exactly, and that's how it evolved. And there are, and I'll get to that in just a minute, but you're right, there are good and bad. There are those that can help, and it gets into a very similar to an whole sort of angel and demon argument. And just as Brett said, believed to carry out Satan's agenda in Islam, causing the possessed to feel pain, illness, or to have evil thoughts. It is said in the Quran that humans are made of mud and clay, and jinn are made of smoke and fire. And in this verse here in Quran, Surah Rahman, quote, is, and he created jinn from fire and smoke, unquote. It is believed that properly reciting certain passages from the Quran should expel the jinn from the afflicted individual, as well as appealing to Alwi angels for assistance. The Hindus have their own exorcism practices. Some Hindus believe possession can block the very will of God. Their exorcism methods include chanting mantras, holding bunches of neem leaves. Neem leaves are a tree in the mahogany family whose oil can be used as an insecticide. They also blow sacred ash onto the possessed person. And one funny aspect of the Hindu exorcism I thought is the spirit could leave the person's body possibly by offering it some really good food, sort of like making it a really good meal. And the spirit possessing the person may actually leave and say, okay, that's a good enough offering, and may leave. Or if that doesn't work, the spirit is whipped out of the person. Now on to Taoist mystical tradition. Taoist monks of some lineages do in fact have their own exorcism techniques. The Taoists believe that when a person is, quote, possessed, unquote, that this is not necessarily a demon. The Taoists view this possession as a person suffering from an imbalance of energy. They see this as an excess of yin, or spiritual female intuitive energy. So they engage in a ritual for the purposes of raising yang, or masculine active energy. The Taoist altar, some of you that may or may not know, is composed of these elements. This is a basic Taoist altar here. The sacred lamp, this represents the light of Tao, the light of all, the light in the sky, cosmic starlight, and of course the light inside of you. It's usually a pretty big, ornate looking thing. Two candles in front of that representing moon, sun, nature, and life. A green dragon, white tiger. Three cups. The left cup is water or yang energy. The right cup is tea or yin energy. The middle cup is rice, which of course needs both energies to grow. There's five plates of fruit in front of that. This represents the five elements in Taoism: wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. There's an incense burner called a stove where three sticks of incense are placed, representing the three treasures or three forms of energy within the human body. Those three energy forms are Jing, reproductive, Qi, life force, original, Shen, spiritual energy, which is a bit more, some people ask what's the difference between Qi and Shen, you know, because one says life force, one says spiritual energy. Shen often deals with the energy of you now. Qi is sort of the original universal energy. One could say, going back to a more primordial source, where Shen might be more what you are now and what you're making of it now and you're progressing now. So that is a... There is some burning sometimes involved. Taoists even have burning spells similar to the pagan ones. And so they just do a ritual where they try to raise the other opposite complementary yang energy to counteract this possession. It's just seen as an energy imbalance. All right, well, I think it is safe to assume that when most people, most Americans anyway, think of a tradition that engages in exorcism, they think of the Catholic Church. It is assumed in Christian thought that demon possession is the result of a person dabbling in the occult. I've heard that story so many times, and I was quoting Father Vincent Serpa on that one. The Catholic Church does still perform exorcisms, and some people are actually not aware of that, officially sanctioned by the Vatican. In the USA, it is not often openly discussed or advertised. And again, Father Vincent Serpa states, quote, "It is the bishop who has the authority over this ministry." So priests can't just sort of go running around doing exorcisms. They're supposed to check in with the bishop, and it's supposed to be somebody who has been Vatican trained. In 1998, the Vatican released, and Pope John Paul II approved, a document known as De Exorcismus et Supplicationibus. Wow, that was awful, sorry. Gibostum. My Latin's pretty bad. This document lays out a precise and liturgical 84-page form for the rite of exorcism. The last I myself heard, there was 9 or 10 officially qualified Catholic exorcists in the United States. That is, they were officially sanctioned by the Vatican, considered to be officially trained and sanctioned by the Vatican. So I don't know if the numbers have increased since then. That was the last I remember hearing, about 9 or 10 of them in the U.S.
Well, the church does want to keep it a lot more low-key now. You said, they don't really talk about it. It's actually been up and down, especially the last couple of years, that they even really started talking about it again. The bishops have been, an official statement from the Pope that the bishops have been reinformed, this is your job if this needs to happen. You are the people that can say it's okay. And that kind of you're still doing it to common people. The Protestants also are involved in exorcism work, depending on the church and stuff that they're a part of, and they usually don't have to answer to anyone. They just go and do the "in the name of Jesus, we cast you out" type deal, which is what most people think when they think a quick exorcism as opposed to the long ritualistic one that you see from the Catholic Church.
Yes, including with, you know, almost like having your papers to do it. You know, like you really, it's an 84-page document to learn how to be an exorcist. And I'd like to take this time just for a second to say hello to the room. And how's everybody doing? Thanks for joining us in the chat room today. I see Marcy and Phoenix Firestar, so I see a few familiar names in there. Thank you all very much for supporting us here today. And it's been a long week, but not bad. I had a very late night last night at work, but I'm feeling good. Beautiful day here. Kevin and I have been blessed. Pretty much every show day here has been this amazingly gorgeous day. It really has been. One rainy day, I think, but it still wasn't that bad. And we're talking about exorcism today. And I wanted to comment as well, Brett, on when you mentioned the Protestants. I was going to get to that in just a second. Yeah, they're a little more independent contractors when they're Protestants. They sort of just depends on the church, and they go in there with a pretty quick and clean thing and hold up the cross and
busy with their prodding.
Yeah. And then they might do something like go around your house and look for something they don't approve of. Like say if they find like maybe a Dungeons and Dragons book or anything that looks to them like I've heard of these stories.
Or a peace sign even.
Yeah, it can be a peace sign. I've actually run into that before where they'll say it's a cross upside down broken with a circle. You know, so it's anything they don't approve of, and they'll pretty much put it in a trash can and burn it, or burn it however they burn it. Which brings me to the next person I was going to talk about who mentions exorcism. This name comes to mind. Some of you might recognize the name Bob Larson. Bob Larson's website makes a pretty big claim that he is the world's foremost expert on cults, the occult, and supernatural phenomena. That's a pretty big claim, but there it is. He claims to perform 500 to 1,000 exorcisms a year. He has now recruited his daughter, Bryn, who is now 17, who did her first exorcism when she was 13, as well as a girl, Tess, who is 17, and Savannah, who is 20. These young girls are now part of his exorcism team. Some say the whole thing is a money grab, but who knows? I mean, I think Mr. Larson actually passionately believes in what he's doing.
Or that his world is thriving in demons and that he's working his best just to fight them off. So it's like all the people that are in his world are possessed and everybody else's world is normal.
I guess. Because he's been doing this for a long time. Bob's past passions include discussing the evils of rock music. He has a long history of warning us against the dangers of the occult, and he used to be big on like the occult and rock bands and stuff like that. He was a musician himself at one time in that world. So I guess something scared him when he was in that world. And I've lived the nightlife out there, too, folks. I guess there's some scary things that can happen. But
he probably had a conversation with Jimmy Page.
Yeah. But, folks, do you know that this word occult is really not so scary after all? But it looks very ominous when you're kind of coming at it from Bob Larson's angle. It actually is a word which means hidden, as in hidden knowledge. The meaning of the word occult is knowledge that is hidden from people for the purposes of protection. I've even seen it written out longer like that. In Hinduism, the Atharva Veda contains a number of occult practices. And again, they were meant to empower and to protect us. And it's funny, this Atharva Veda, sorry, I had something in my throat, this ancient occult religious writing even has some similarities with witchcraft and such. There is not spells, for instance, in the Atharva Veda. and other divinations and such. So it's just funny when you start looking these things up and seeing all their little similarities. And
the same things appear in different places all the time. They all come from the same source.
Absolutely.
I actually kind of want to go back a little bit. I was actually curious because it seems that your brother is there with you. Does the Unitarian Church actually have an official stance on exorcisms?
Well, he did actually leave the room.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I would say that Unitarians, as far as an official exorcism, would just say if it therapeutically helps somebody, then go ahead and give them one. Because a lot of Unitarians are very agnostic and atheistic even. So I would say, I don't know if that would even be an official stance. I would say most Unitarians, but I can't speak for them, would probably say, well, if you go through this little thing and, you know, wave a cross in the air and say this and that, and if it seems to help the person in a therapeutic way, then go ahead and do it. That would be my guess as a Unitarian position towards that. And I just want to say quickly, you can call in. Feel free, 760-542-4345. But, yeah, my brother did leave the room. He was here for a minute and just said, hey, his meeting this morning was canceled, so he said, can I play some drums on your show? So I said, sure.
Oh, well, it was a curiosity.
Sure. But anyway, now I wanted to get back to where I started in the beginning. I mentioned things like how pagans feel like they protect themselves. So we've discussed Hindu, Jewish mystical Kabbalah, Islam, Christianity, Protestant and Catholic, and independent. Like, I don't know if Bob Larson considers himself a denomination or not, to be honest, or just kind of his own entity out there. But as far as some things that pagans do, I guess you could say that, first of all, if you're talking about sort of earth-based paganism or what's called neo-paganism or even Wicca, they do not necessarily believe in an all-evil, one great enemy being of Satan or devil out there. We believe in good and bad tendencies within us all, or perhaps different spiritual beings that have those same flaws that humans have that are out there wandering about. But some can be very, very harmful. I'm not one of these people that are saying that the bad isn't out there. In fact, without going into any detail, I have history, direct history in my family of relatives that claimed to be possessed their house. They claimed that they were being under a spiritual attack by spiritual beings. So for me to sit here and say that I don't believe that these things are possible would not be honest, and I've witnessed it myself in my life. I don't think it's in the Christian form. I think it's in a different form, but they were very, you know, very, very fundamentalist Christian, and they were very scared of this, and it was two people involved, but it's kind of a family story that I'm not going to say on the air now. They might actually get mad at me if I go into detail. So, and Kevin himself, he lived in a haunted house as well.
That's right.
And did you feel like negative presences, or did you just feel like a lot of activity?
Well, it was more of just like I had a roommate, basically. I had a cat, and I had a roommate that really didn't pay rent. And how I first came to know about him was there was one morning that I woke up and I heard French being spoken where I heard moi bouve de qui mort. And I don't speak French, but my friend Bob Hickman taught French for many years in Canada, and he translated that into someone was saying, I drank to death. And it was very odd, very interesting, all the same. It's like this guy wanted to tell me his story, but he manifested himself on the wall of one of the rooms in my house, and I put up a video out on YouTube. You know, my YouTube channel is templeofgaia.com, and it's the latest video that I posted showing his face that's there. But he was someone who spoke French, I don't speak French, and so we had a communication issue. And you know that I have the ability for xenoglossy, to where I'm able to speak foreign languages that I don't understand. I hear them from spirit whenever I'm doing readings or channelings, but the people who are sitting with me, the clients, can translate what I'm saying back into the reading, and so that way we can have a flow. But this guy didn't like cats either, and every time that I would leave the laundry room open in my house, that he would take the laundry soap and throw it out the door at the cat. When he would walk by the room, it got to where the cat wouldn't want to walk by the laundry room. So it's just really that these people are living where they are right now until they get some closure. So my opinion about exorcisms is not really necessary. It's just really, the point is to open up a line of communication so that everybody that's present, whether it's physical or non-physical, can have a line of communication.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, go ahead, Brett.
I was at a lecture last weekend, and the speaker made actually a rather good point that, assuming that we either need to exercise or move the spirit onto the next plane, depending if it's a ghost or a demon, whatever, you know,
yeah,
is actually rather presumptuous of us.
Right.
Exactly,
but
I agree.
They might just be having a bad day, just like we're having a bad day, and they have every right to be where they are as you do, unless, you know, of course, they're actually starting to hurt people.
Right, I agree. Like, who are we, who's only been here for, like, 50 years, for in my case, or 10, and so other people's cases, who are we to say, oh, it's time for you to leave?
Mm-hmm. And again, some people think it's little more than an energy imprint, like it's not a conscious thing coming at you or living with you. In Kevin's case, that he mentioned, it sounded a bit more conscious, like a conscious entity. It liked and disliked certain things. But yeah, that is a good point. Who are we to say that they're supposed to go?
I know.
Just like we feel weird if they're doing that thing, like in your dreams, going, get out.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a minute, I pay the bills here, I'm not going anywhere.
And after you've had spirits active in your life for a while, you're not so unnerved whenever it's time for you to have intimacy with your partner, girlfriend, boyfriend, you know, husband, spouse, that kind of stuff, that they're around. It's no big deal because they've been watching it probably for like 200 years, so it's passé.
Were you having a shyness issue with a ghost? Yeah.
I know people who are worried about that, about
I know.
Living in a house that's been handed down through the generations and having sex.
I've heard people say that, like, what am I taking a shower? Somebody watching me?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's a lot you could do about that.
And another thing, you know, the ancient Indian burial ground that is so popular in the United States. Well, the entire world is a burial ground.
Yeah.
You can't escape one. So it has nothing to do with the fact that it's a burial ground usually.
Right, right. It's, in fact, it's more likely to me that you would run into a haunting not in a burial ground, but in a place where there was lots of life activity for
exactly.
That spirit, where their imprints would be left, or their leftover energy or a part of the soul, however you want to say it, would still be there, still remaining, whether conscious or just energy imprint. So the gravesite might be much less of a chance to have a ghost experience unless something dramatic happened in it, like say it was a war and they were buried where they fell on the battlefield or very close by. Go ahead, Kevin.
I have something that I can share about that. I went to a gravesite with a friend of mine who just wanted me to accompany them, but I happened upon a woman who was in spirit that was there who was haunting the place, but that's because she had been going to the grave of her husband every day for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was her passion.
Right.
So that's where the hauntings can occur. The guy who spoke French in my place maybe liked where he was living in my place, you know, now that it's my place or whatever. So they go, they stay, they be where they were passionate.
Well, it might not even be that. It might be just the fact that they like you. they
yeah,
think
that
you're
could
a
be
cool
that
person.
Too.
Yeah. I mean, he's Kevin Baird, Temple of Gaia. Come on.
Yeah, everywhere is a temple, really, for everybody.
But I'd also like to get into, because this is getting close to what my next point was going to be. We're not exactly on it, but I was going to make a point about, there's a common argument that happens in the Christian world, and you see this a lot, and I know you've all seen stories on whether it's been Discovery Network, and here's how the storyline goes. Somebody starts off, they're either Christian or they're sort of neutral agnostic or something. Then they decide they're going to experiment with the occult. And so they experiment with the occult, maybe even join a tradition. Maybe they become part of some group, coven, whatever, just they become part of a tradition. Somewhere along the lines, when they're in the midst of this, they're told, well, you know what, there's a real, like, actual secret where you get the real power. So it kind of continues to get darker and darker, and then eventually their dabblings in the occult lead to this sort of possession and all this awful stuff. Almost every person that I've met, now I have met people that dabble in strange things, but I mean most of the pagans I know experiment with things and use things for the purposes of learning and progressing and getting better and better, and it doesn't follow this trend at all. Now, I have known people that were very, very fundamentalists that experimented with the occult, but they became so afraid of it because of how they were trained that it started to freak them out, so they jumped out of it and just went back into being, you know, fully Christian again. But this whole notion of it starts out light and then eventually it leads to the devil and it leads to Satan worship, I have only seen that for people that desire already to be in some form a Satanist, whether it's a LaVey Satanist, which is basically an atheist almost, or a theistic Satanist. They basically are following that path because they want to. It's not my path, I'm just saying, but it's not like the introduction was this lighter kind of fluffy witchcraft that's going to eventually lead to this dark path and you're going to be possessed and all of this. I've never really witnessed that scenario acted out, but you hear it a lot on these shows that do a special about, you know, oh, I was in this thing and nothing in the occult can be trusted. It's just not the case. Okay, it looks like, do we have a caller?
No, Reverend Phoenix was saying that she had a question and
oh,
that
sure.
She wanted to call in as well. I told her to go ahead. And if you guys want to call in with a question, the number is 760-542-4345. I posted it in the chat room also.
Okay, good. So feel free. It'll give you the option if you do decide to call. It'll give you the option of one or two. One,
okay.
Two.
I think we just got her in.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring the mic on. Yeah. Okay.
Hello.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? And welcome to Main Street Universe.
I'm doing pretty good.
And
is this Reverend Phoenix?
This is.
Oh, very nice.
Firestar Rising. I love that.
Anyway, did you have a question? Or
no,
a
I wanted to. When you were talking about the in the cemetery and stuff.
Yes.
I had a strange visit one year with a spirit in the cemetery.
Okay.
What was it?
It was at Samhain, and a bunch of friends and I were walking through the cemetery. I used to do that all the time anyhow. And we're walking along, and the next thing I know, I'm flat on my back on the ground. I'd actually been knocked over by a spirit. And I ended up going back later to find out what was going on, and it was a young kid who had died rather suddenly and was, like, really upset about finding himself not where he wanted to be, you know?
Right.
And I spent the night out there working with him to make him understand what had happened, because it had, you know, the shock of going from life to death, that, you know, was really bothered him. But
yes.
That's all I wanted to share. I ended up having black and blue marks from where I'd actually hit him.
Wow, so you actually had a physical contact with an entity.
That was interesting.
Yeah. And did you feel, after you were done with working with him, did you feel like it was resolved in some way?
Yeah, I do, because he didn't move on. He stayed in the cemetery
mm-hmm.
for quite some time and made that his home, so to speak.
Which in that case, it would make sense, because it was sort of, he couldn't believe he's dead, probably sitting there staring at his tombstone going, what is going on? Especially being a kid and being so young.
Yeah. But yeah, I ended up spending lots of time, you know, I would go out there a lot and deal with a lot of the spirits that were in the cemetery itself, and he became one of my regulars, so to speak.
Oh. And I did want to make the point that when we did make that point about the cemetery, I didn't necessarily mean that there's no activity there. I'd be saying a lot of times where your hauntings occur is where people were really active when they were alive. But of course,
right.
The cemetery being the focus point of, okay, that's where you go when you die, I'm sure there are plenty of spirits that are attracted to that place as well.
Right. I mean, the ones that I dealt with for the most part were ones that had been buried there, and their spirits just remain there.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a place that I enjoyed to go, because I really like working with the spirits.
And so you seem like you have a certain sensitivity. Do you do anything as far as readings or anything like that, or do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I haven't, you know, dealt with that aspect of it.
Sure, sure. Just sort of a natural gift for being sensitive
right.
to spiritual entities and things like that. The main thing I had was out-of-body experiences as a kid. That was what sort of brought me to the metaphysical dance. I just used to have so many. And at first, when you're a kid, you think it's scary and you're going to die and all this, or that's what's happening and you don't know what's going on. Which takes me to another point, that the more I have experimented with... Oh, she hung up. Okay. I'll make my point, and then we'll get to Kevin's segment. The more I have experimented with metaphysical practice, the less and less and less and less and less afraid I am of any of it. That's what's going to be sort of the final conclusion to what I was saying, that story that is often told about people dabbling in the occult. The more I get into it, the far less afraid of any of it I am. Because you become a strong, shielded person and practitioner. And you learn what protects you, and you build your confidence, which is very important in these sort of practices. You've got to go in with a degree of confidence. But thank you very much for your call, Reverend Phoenix. And thank you very much for listening to Main Street Universe today. And thank you for sharing your story, because it's always nice to be able to do that, because sometimes people don't necessarily believe you. One spirit thing I get a lot, I think I've mentioned before, is I get the ghost cats a lot. Little cats that aren't there anymore walking on the bed. But right now, I would like to go to Kevin Baird to discuss his card of the week.
Yes, the I'm Okay card. I designed or drew this card and put it into the Horizon Oracle deck because many people, whenever they're working with, you know, divination, that kind of thing, they're trying to see what's coming up for the future, but they also want to connect with people in spirit. Well, what I did was I designed this card to let the people know that whenever they draw it, that there is somebody indeed working with them that's close to them, that is in spirit, and they're just basically saying, I'm okay. I'm here, I'm hanging out. Sort of like the guy, the French guy, who was in my old house that threw the laundry tubs at the cat, was just basically saying, I'm here, I'm supposed to be doing something, I'm not really sure, I need some closure, so I'm just going to hang around until I understand why I'm here. And it might take 200 years, but basically it's just I'm okay. You don't need to kick me out. I don't take up much room. Everything's going to be okay. And it fits perfectly with Daniel's topic for today, which is the exorcisms and kicking spirits out, because we were taught that that's what we're supposed to do. I was wondering what the original source for kicking the demons out was? Like, what do you think the first demon was that had to be ejected, Daniel?
It could be a lot of things. I think it could have been just there's someone you want to blame, like someone in the village you want to blame for something. So, oh, you're different in some way.
And or that rye mold, remember, that drove people crazy?
Mm-hmm. The Salem.
The ergot.
Ergot, ergotism.
Thank you, Brett.
But
and similar things like that. Things like just someone born with mental illness. Go ahead, Brett.
A lot of my research continues to point back to as far back as Sumeria. Really, from the beginning of civilization, we were kind of doing this thing.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure they had their own methodologies dealing with it. And, yeah, when I see that card, it seems like, when you're talking about the I'm okay card, it definitely seems like there's a message from beyond saying, just as the card says, saying it's going to be okay, the person's stressed and worried. I'd like to go on to some plugs right now.
I was going to say, I see something in the card, too, that the angel almost looks bored. Like they've been through this before. It's like, yep, we're here again. That's okay, take your time. But it almost just looks like they've done this before. And just sitting on the grave waiting for their time, you know?
Yep, chilling in the recliner of the gravestone. I've always felt I put them on the gravestone because they, the guys back to Stonehenge designed Stonehenge for the ancestors who had passed away as a house for them to live in. So I think that's the origin of our gravestones of today. It's just a house for ghosts.
Well, it's a marker and a memoriam and all these things. I have one side of my family that has a small little mausoleum. I mean, they didn't have that much money, but one of them was like a mayor of the little town or something. And there's this little, I think it's like a four casket mausoleum above ground and all that. But I would like to plug Kevin Baird, psychic medium, intuitive consultant. You can be found at www.templeofgaia.com, as well as the stores Crystalis in Herndon and Sticks and Stones in Fairfax. I would also like to give a plug to Esoterica, our guest last week, Lily. Esoterica online now in Sterling, Virginia, 703-777-4642, or www.esotericanova.com. Still your new age interfaith focus, herbs, crystals, stones, oils, candles, incense, divination tools, and more. That's www.esotericanova.com. And now I'd like to go on to our Eye in the Sky report with Brett Rune-Hillman, if you're ready. Are you ready, Brett?
I am indeed.
Okay, go ahead.
The big one, of course, is Mercury retrograde did begin this week. I talked more about that last week, though, so I do kind of want to move on. But, well, we've had some fun today with our various communications, drop phone calls and stuff. I can't really explain a broken computer so much, though. So that one is completely random. But the big one is the conjunction of Venus and Jupiter. They're both, and it's one of the strongest ones that we've had in years, and they're both in Taurus, which kind of gives them, and of course Venus rules Taurus, and the moon is in Sagittarius, which Jupiter rules. So we have a kind of a couple of ruling planets kind of taking a real big control moment here. And Jupiter is kind of that fun-loving, jumpy, but he's also real quick-tempered.
Mm.
Quick to change at a moment's notice. At the drop of a hat, he can become furious. So it could be a matters of love here. You could also get that kind of a lucky streak. Jupiter's very big on luck. So you might get lucky in love today, but really, really just kind of watch yourself. Don't let yourself get overly emotional, because you will get in that angry moment relatively quick. And a final note is that the sun will be leaving Pisces on Monday, and we will be beginning our new astrological year. And to mark that, I will begin kind of the little mini 101 parts alongside the eye in the sky, and I'll probably be doing that after our ritual if we have time.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, though, because I did a reading for myself this morning. Though, honestly, and you know this happens to me all the time if I don't write them down, I forgot what cards I picked up. But I remember its interpretation of saying, it literally just said, don't be over-emotional and just rely on your talents, was basically just a simple one of those, how's the day going to be today kind of a thing. And it was from the Oracle, actually. I forgot the cards. I forget if I don't write them down. I know our friend Marcy, she'll write down cards for her readings and go back. And I know Kevin recommends people to do that, whether it's the Tarot or any Oracle card or Horizon Oracle. He recommends you write down your daily cards and go back and look at them every day. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. You know how that goes. But I do remember that being the pretty clear message on it. So the Jupiter thing might be some good wisdom as far as, could be a little bit of luck, but watch the emotions. So does that conclude your report?
It does for this week, unless you have any particular question.
No, I think that pretty much captured the emotion of that. It kind of went right in line with the reading I did for myself this morning.
Okay.
Maybe one question. I don't know how far ahead you've looked. This only lasts for like a day or two, this Jupiter thing?
About a day or two.
Okay.
There's another one coming up, I believe it's between Mercury and Uranus, coming up the day after that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Mercury in retrograde, I really didn't want to read too much into it because I'm new at this. So I wanted to be 100% sure before I made any jumps and, you know, been completely burnt up by that.
Sure. And that's cool. But I did like how it kind of tied in with my reading this morning, so that was cool. A similar warning. So I've heard it twice now. So if I bump into something today, keep my emotions under control.
And like I said, the moon is actually only in Sagittarius for the same day. So that's why I kind of made it a point. We kind of have two ruling planets kind of in control here. Of course, Venus rules one of the planets in conjunction, while Jupiter will be with the moon, in a sense, this coming week. So.
Good. Okay. Well, that was Brett Hillman in his Eye in the Sky report, and here we get the symbol again. And we're still working some things here out in the studio. Like, my brother came in this morning, who was like, I want to play the drums, and I'm like, wow, this mic can be really sensitive. So we're kind of putting the phones near the outside and trying not to let it dominate. Soon we'll be working on some different technologies for this, but just wanted to get on the air first. And should, at the end of the day at some point, have another YouTube Cafe Fairfax video, which we do. If you can go to YouTube, we have a channel there, and it's called Cafe Fairfax. And on to is he putting up the link now? YouTube link off of website.
Yeah, we have a YouTube link off of the Main Street Universe website. Just click on the YouTube icon and it'll jump you there too.
Yeah, it'll take you to Cafe Fairfax. And that's our place where we post videos. Sometimes they're just videos of interest to either Kevin and I, something paranormal, or it's musical performances, and since it's new, there's about, two musical performances on
right
there now. After today, there might be
three. Also, your show openings get posted there?
Yeah, and that's usually what they are. As of now, I have other musical performances that we'll eventually put up there.
And we'll be hosting other musicians as well there, too, who are trying to get themselves on YouTube.
Yes, we'll be doing that in the studio. And those will be different. Those won't be on Main Street Universe, the show. Those will be just Cafe Fairfax activities, which might include bringing our cameras out to a festival. It could include all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Kevin doing his ghost tours, if that thing starts working out.
Yep. In Dumfries, Virginia, by the way. Let me plug that real quick.
Sure.
Second weekend in April at the Weems Bott, Weems-Bott Museum. It's supposedly a museum that's like 150 years old, and a lot of mayhem happened around there with Civil War soldiers, that kind of stuff. So very haunted, very, very haunted, and going to be doing a ghost tour there.
Okay, well, that's cool. And like I said, we might bring video and microphones out for that. I think a sip of water.
Exactly, that should be a good time.
So that's Cafe Fairfax on YouTube. It can be reached from our www.mainstreetuniverse.com website. And back to our original topic here, talking about exorcism. And so I did have people, and they were actually very nice, and they were Christians and very fundamentalists, asking me about, are we not afraid that we're messing with forces that we don't understand, can't control? I'm like, well, I don't know if anybody fully understands them. What I do know is that the practices and the protections that you use, if you believe in them, they work. And that's just like so much of the metaphysical world. If you believe in it and if it's right for you, then it works. So I would say that the pagan view is a little bit similar. Again, I'm saying this for me. I'm not talking about other pagans out there that might have a different practice. For me, it's similar to the Taoist view of cleansing excess energy. This doesn't mean that I don't believe that there are beings out there. I do. I'm just saying, for the most part, as a daily practice, I see it as an energy cleanse, daily or every other daily or whatever. And here are some of the things that people do, that witches do, for cleansing, whether it's for just having negative spirits not bother you, or whether you're just viewing it as energy buildup. And one could be burning of sage, very popular one, or other cleansing incense. There's other ones out there. Some people don't even burn it because they're sensitive and smoke sensitive, so they just sort of, you know, smudge it around, sometimes not even lighting it, just getting the smell in the room. Sage has been used a pretty long time. There's also other oils, such as clove. I personally love clove oil for protection, or clove incense. Some people say clove incense is actually a little bit dangerous. I burn clove incense, but I've heard people say it's not the greatest for your lungs if you're right near it. But I love clove oil. I use it. I put clove oil, it's a little bit of clove, tea tree, and cinnamon actually on my little tarot card box. So when you pull them out of the box, they kind of have this scent to them. There's also crystals that are used for protection. And Kevin Baird is usually wearing his giant purple amethyst around his neck when I see it. And amethyst is a very attractive crystal. And it's also one of the most well-known for protection. Other ones are known for grounding, which can help kind of get rid of extra energy. That would be hematite, to some degree, kyanite. Kyanite's also good for balancing of chakras and balancing your energy in general. I have a big... Go ahead.
My rune stones are hematite. So when I hold them, I also get a very grounding effect, and kind of it's very helpful when beginning to do some other magical work.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the kyanite stones. That's the stone that I've noticed that emits a fragrance whenever it's exposed to heat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it gives you, it's an earthy kind of smell, smell like you're at the beach kind of stuff,
if
very relaxing.
If you hold it up, I guess, it's a little bit earthy, I guess, especially if you have a bigger piece of it.
Chrysalis has like a big 50-pound stone of it.
Yeah,
big 50-pound stone of it, and they have this big, like, spotlight on it that just heats up and it glows.
Oh.
And it has that smell. It's just very grounding.
That's cool. And other different things could include visualization, meditative styles of cleansing, often involving different colors of light, chakra colors and things like that, or starting with white light and going to pale blue and then crown chakra purple, which is considered a high vibration. Some people have problems with visualization. So some people, when you tell them a visualization technique, and there's so many, some of them, especially when they're new practitioners, they kind of lack faith in it. So they really want an external item. You know, they really want that, like we're talking about, a grounding stone, or they want a cleansing incense or a protective crystal. Now, me, I got into this whole thing, everything was in my mind. So to me, visualization techniques feel very powerful. But it takes some convincing sometimes for new practitioners to buy into visualizations. So that's what the external tools are really good for helping with. So I say use what works for you. Just for some examples, some people, when they meditate, they almost always want to have meditative music in the background. I personally say go ahead and do that if it works for you. I do it myself sometimes. I used to do it more than now. Now I do it pretty much quiet, but especially in the beginning when people are starting to practice these things, the music, the incense, having your favorite crystal or amulet, which is my next one, is some people will build or make a special protective charm, a special protective amulet, or they'll buy it from someone that maybe they believe in that person's ability, so it makes them believe in the charm even more, and again, for protection. There are spells you can do for protection, real simple ones. There's also, in my opinion, the most important, or the most, again, simple, but again, it's convincing people to believe in their visualizations, is the building of a daily building, or almost daily building, of a psychic shield, and just doing that and sending your intention out to shield. Again, there's many techniques for this. The one I use is kind of a combination. I like to put my hands out physically when I do this and kind of mime it before I start the visualization. Then I do it very similar how is in the Corellian lessons about the ball of light above you. But I start off like this. Again, I do a lot of the opening with some physical stuff. So I put the palm of my hands together, get them a little bit warm, put them near the heart chakra, put my hands above my head, then I feel the ball of energy up there. These are just things I do to enhance things. Then it all just starts happening. The visualization happens really naturally. I kind of have this pushing out when I exhale a little bit. I picture a shield of light all over around you, you know, and I kind of physically mime it even to help aid it. Don't always have to do that, but especially when I started, I incorporated all this. So you're picturing the shield around you, and I add the element to the psychic shield of a mirror all the way around the outside of the shield, deflecting anything that can come in, almost like it's one glass mirror dome surrounding you. And then I even go another level beyond that of a purple crown chakra flame even outside of that in front of the mirror. So it's like these layers and layers and layers of just sort of built-up psychic protections. And that's kind of how I visualize it. And see that the borders get bigger and bigger if necessary. So building a psychic shield is very important and is more of a daily exercise, I guess, than a spell. Now, any comments on that, Kevin? Protection, shielding?
Yeah, but you don't want to shield yourself because then you block out energies for prosperity as well. So you have to have a compromise in there.
Yeah, but I think when most people think of a shield, they're thinking of just keeping out negativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes people perceive something that is new to them as negative. Some people don't like change, and therefore they try to block it. And then Sometimes whenever you're trying to get yourself out of a rut, and then something happens on the side that's changing that you weren't really ready for, but the universe had set that up to help you get out of that block.
I also think that can depend on how you set yourself up consciously when you're doing other things. So if you're open and saying you're willing to accept in other meditations or just your daily thoughts
right.
the positive things that can come in. In that case, I don't think your shield will accidentally block it out. I truly think it's a protective measure. But I do see your point. I mean, it's a valid point. I think how you're open the rest of the day could clear up that issue. But I know what you mean. You want to be careful also of not being, you know, like this sheltered hermit kind of shielded, right. and you're not taking in anything at all.
Because then you might as well just live in the basement.
Yeah.
You know, and not do anything.
But I think that can be determined by how you're viewing life the rest of your day.
Right.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. What you're going to be open up to when out on Main Street.
Yes.
And
because there are two types of energies in the world, the ones that teach us how to be and how not to be, basically. So where to be, where not to be. So if you're in a situation that's very confrontational, then that's a message that maybe you should be somewhere else, as opposed to trying to create a shield that you can sort of like use a force shield to go through some kind of like, you know, gas nebula or something to make your way onto the other side. There might be something there to realize, and you would be blocking it out as a part of your path.
Yeah. And another way, and this way may be more favored by, I guess, what you might call slightly more religious metaphysical practitioners or more slightly more religious pagans. Some don't call it a religion. I don't really want that debate right now. We don't have enough time in the show. Let's just say pagan religion for right now. Is the reliance or the asking of, like if you're feeling kind of weak and feeling like something negative might come in, is asking the help of the deity of your choice or deities of your choice, whatever your pantheon is, or the one you work with the most, and saying, asking for them to protect you. So that's another protection that a pagan or a witch may use. In my case, I work the most with the goddess Kuan Yin, so I would probably ask her. And the more you work the deity, the more powerful all the reality of it becomes. So you feel like, well, you know what, this whatever's being sent to me, if it's going to be negative, this goddess is, not, you know, it's not going to be stronger than that. You know what I mean? She's the one that denied death to come back and help us. Or she denied paradise to come back and help us. That's the story of Kuan Yin, the compassionate rebel, she's called. And since my start into the metaphysical world started with a little bit of mystical Taoism when I was a kid, I took Kung Fu. To me, that sort of, that Buddhist Asian goddess just appealed to me as a patron deity in that force in the universe.
That could be a past life connection for you.
Sure. Absolutely. I used to feel that way when I used to take Kung Fu. I used to feel like I was doing something I had done. Just like I feel the same way, like when I first started reading tarot cards, I felt like I was doing something I had done before. And the same thing with music. At least singing. Guitar didn't feel as natural to me. Singing, I felt like I've sung, you know, for a long time. I guess we all have sung at some point. But, or at least wanted to. There are some people that want to, that if you've ever watched the tryouts for American Idol, that maybe it's their first life singing.
Speaking of American Idol, I just heard that the Big Bang Theory TV show has out-topped American Idol in the ratings.
Really?
And that they just got a guest star to come on. Stephen Hawking is going to be guest starring on their show. I think it's next week or the week after. You can just go and check their blog out to see what's going on with that. But I found that very interesting.
I don't have television here. I can watch stuff on internet.
Right.
But I don't watch the show, but I know it's become hugely popular. I hear people talk about it.
Yep, it's interesting. It's a bunch of academics who are trying to cope with reality of the non-educated that are out there, and they're caught in a neutral zone between the two.
Yeah, and then there's like
coping
with
life.
Kind of cute girl there or whatever with them.
Penny.
Right.
Yeah, it's all funny.
All right.
And we have 15 minutes left.
So any extra thoughts, Brett, on protection and or any aspect we've talked about? Are you there, Brett? Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
I have to step away from the mic for a second.
All right. Anyway, there he comes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I muted myself.
Okay.
A big thing when I've probably been responding to you the entire time. The big thing when you were talking about shields, a big thing to remember is a make more of a bubble, something that can be brought down if it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And permeable would be, you know, preferable, because even some bad things are there to help you grow, as Kevin kind of mentioned.
Right.
You don't want to close everything off, or you're actually going to be closing yourself off. So when you get into a bad mood, or you get yourself in a energy loop, you're going to actually be hurting yourself with that wall.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really careful with those kind of things.
Yeah, and I take it to that extra level I was saying when I feel more threatened. You know, it's like an emotional thing. You know, most of the time, it's kind of the basic, you know, shield that we're familiar with of the, you know, the ball, the sort of the bubble of white light around you. And I physically kind of mime it, and I picture it off the bubble filling up. And then you say some, you know, positive things about the light that's in the shield and feel that it's really surrounding you and it's all around you. And that it's coming from a divine light. And that's sort of it in its most basic form. I remember I've heard of people, some people put onions in their windows. there's all kinds of things. Driving a nail, iron spikes in front of your door. Then there's like things like the witch's bottle spells and all these things, little protection things, you know. I've heard mirrors in the window. And different hanging of different things, garlic and such like that. So there's lots of things over the years that have come off to be protection. I thought what was interesting earlier when I mentioned the neem leaves in the Hindu tradition for the they used in the exorcism. And it's also an insecticide, so I wonder if that has something to do with them choosing that. If it's something that bugs go away from, that they think, oh, it wards things off, you know, maybe a little bit of a scientific reason there. So soon, next week actually, we're going to be having a ritual here. And that should be interesting. I'm sort of writing it with a little bit of a druid influence, as well as the structure that I'm used to, and then adding a different visualization, one that I'm in the process of writing right now. And since it's spring, it'll be very tree-oriented, and that's kind of how I wanted it. Spring equinox. And we'll be joined by Melissa from the Karelian Nativist Tradition website, Witch School International. And also, I'd like to plug Pagans Warrior Radio, two people that I know personally here in Virginia, David Ewing and Janet Ewing. I think maybe Kevin's met them before. I know they've been in Sticks and Stones plenty of times.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and they're graduates of Selena Fox's Circle Sanctuary program. And they are officially legally recognized clergy, both just in the country and in the program. And they're very informed people. They know a lot about the military issues. And they're on Pagans Tonight every Saturday night. And you can reach Pagans Tonight either just by Googling it up and looking for that, or going through Witch School International, which is a site I comment on often. And, you know, advertise the show sometimes there on the forums and such like that. And Janet and David, I've had lunch with them a few times. I'd like to make more of their rituals and classes and things. And they're very nice people. He's very informed. And I'm sure at some point he'll be on this show, David or Janet. They've already agreed to it, actually. It's just we're just all getting our schedules together, and we're an AM show, you know, so everybody has their jobs and all of that. So at some point we'll get the Ewings on here. Maybe we'll cross and, you know, we be guests on theirs or they be guests on ours. But I'll be seeing them probably the end of this month at another Sunday. They do a little brunch. But anyway, that's Pagan Warriors Radio on Saturday nights, right after the Spanish speaking show. Sorry. And I'd also like to send blessings to, mentioning Witch School International, to Reverend Don Lewis, who was admitted to the emergency room, I believe it was last week. I haven't heard any update on his condition pretty much at all. I just heard he was up and doing a little better, and that was a few days ago. Have you heard any update, Brett?
Yes, I have. He's fine. It was a stress thing mainly. He overdid himself, and he should be all right. He just needs to take it easy for a week or so, and he should be back on his feet.
Okay, because I hadn't heard, like, what was the condition. I hadn't heard anything like that. I just heard he was admitted to an emergency room and that at some point he was up talking. So,
well, if you're not careful, a cheeseburger when you're over 50 can put you in the ER also.
Yeah. You start realizing the effects of stress. You know, the older I get, I definitely notice it more. And I'm not that old, and I'm in pretty good shape. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And also, Kevin, you have been to Salem up there, haven't you?
I have, and I got to meet Reverend Don, and we talked a little bit. He was building his museum of the first ages of magic and witchcraft that goes back to Egyptian times on through to present day. And they're just down the road from the Gallows Hill,
right,
where the witches were hung back in the day.
And when you were there, Well, I guess it had been done if you were in there. Was it still kind of under construction somewhat?
It was still under construction, but he gave me sort of like a guest kind of tour to it. And it's,
oh, cool.
I got to see the sarcophaguses and the other things that are there that are relative. I can't think of right away, but
right.
Very cool.
A couple years
nice.
Back, I guess.
Yeah.
And you also, when you were up there, is that when you met, I don't know, did you meet Raven Grimassi up there too? Was that another?
That was another time.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that was at the psychic fair in Nashville a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay. Because I think you had a conversation with him for about an hour or so, didn't you?
It escapes me right now. I think you might be confusing me with somebody else.
Oh, okay.
but I did have a chance to speak with Silver Ravenwolf.
Oh, okay.
In Nashville. That might be.
Maybe that's what I was.
What
thinking.
You're thinking of?
That's possible.
But, yeah, we got 7 minutes left in the show, and I just find it interesting that we're in a season of change and, you know, spring is in the air. We got early seasons kind of stuff that we're going to – it's 2012 and that we're going to be getting a jump start on this year. It's almost like the universe is helping us prepare for getting all the things that we need to have in a row because maybe something will happen that's related or relative to what the Mayans were talking about and – all the other types of ancient texts. I don't think that it's going to be the end of the world. I think it's just the end of a calendar, and then it's time for a new season for calendars. You know, you're tired of looking at the same pics after a while. You know, you have those things that hang around on the walls. It's like, I need to get out and get a new calendar. They might have had that problem before in the past and just decided to program one that would last for quite a few years.
Right. How long could you make it, right?
No, they might have had a competition.
How long could you just keep going with the calendar? But anyway, folks, for those of you just joining us, we were talking about exorcism and protections and how different cultures view protections against evil spirits and such, or just referring it to negative energy. And speaking... Well, this is not negative energy. This is Kevin Baird, psychic medium, intuitive consultant.
Yep.
www.templeofgaia.com or at the stores Crystalis in Herndon, which I haven't been to Crystalis yet, by the way. I have not been to
that. That's very nice.
Or Sticks and Stones in Fairfax.
And I'll have a print version of my latest 111 cards for the Horizon Oracle ready probably at the end of this month. I know Veronica is in the room. She lives in the UK, and that she is very... amped up about getting her first copy. I've just been struggling with trying to get the workbook ready too, but a lot of people are telling me just move forward with the deck, the intuitives will get it, and we'll just wait for the book when it's ready. Don't want to rush it. So, but yeah, thanks for the plug.
Sure. And again, Esoterica, www.esotericanova.com. Lily was our guest last week. Very, very nice woman. I very much enjoyed talking to her and also talking to her off the air. She's just very lively, and you can see her passion, and that's why I think her new store would do just fine. It's www.esotericanova.com. Now, I would like to go on, which I do have this week, to our Poetry Place segment. We have, this one's from Reverend Silent Al, and she has had a submission here before that was read. And this one is called Silence. Wind blowing in my face as hair whips around me. Smells of spring blooms around me, with fragrances of green grass and wildflowers bobbing in the breeze. The air cools my heated skin as I recline in the grass. Sounds of air passing through the grass lulls me to rest. That is Silence by Reverend Silent Al. And remember, if you give us a submission, I can be reached at witchschool.com on many forums or at Cafe Fairfax on YouTube. Is there a...
And there's info at mainstreetuniverse.com. It's another way to reach us, reach Daniel.
Quite a few different ways. And the poem will be read live on the air, as well as be published in the Karelian Herald, which is written by the very hardworking Reverend Anna. But you don't hear from Reverend Anna often on the Witch School site. But that's because, you know, she's not a blabbermouth like me, I guess. She's actually behind the scenes doing structural work, and she gets that publication out. It's really not a bad publication. She puts some pretty interesting information there sometimes, and I saw that. I thought we could help each other a little bit and, you know, mention them on the air, and they mention me on their publication, and people can get a poem published, which poets are often people that don't get that much attention. I dated two girls that were poets, actually. One did the shouting, whatever you call it. They do the vocal poetry, and they go to these readings. Had some interesting experiences at some of those gatherings in Baltimore City. So back to our topic. We were discussing protection, exorcism. Again, I've had in my family personal experience of people that thought they were being attacked by evil entities. And it was a very unpleasant situation. And yes, there was a death involved. But my family kind of doesn't really want me to talk about its details, so I won't. But I will say that it is something that's happened. And since me as a kid having out-of-body experiences and lucid dreams and seeing ghosts and other things, it was thought that I was going to be like a candidate to be attacked myself. So, of course, my parents were a little scared, thinking, oh, now Dan's getting into all this occult stuff. Now I'm going to be next, kind of a thing. But what I'm saying is that the more I've gotten involved in occult studies, metaphysics, whatever you want to call it, the less afraid I get. And the less concerned I get about that, as long as I'm walking a certain line. Because they say people that have any kind of like a natural, like I consider Kevin, in my natural abilities, mostly the out-of-body experiences, that they're more susceptible to even going crazy. You know, like they say psychics, a lot of them kind of go nuts. But to me, the more you practice, and if you practice properly and use the proper protections, and try to, I know it's hard, keep your karma right, then I don't think you have anything to worry about. In fact, I feel much safer in the spirit world the more I practice. Not like the story that some people promote that, oh, you're dabbling, so now you're in more danger. I think it's the other way around.
Right.
As long as you're doing it, like I say, with certain protections, guidelines, I even include a little karma there, cleansing, grounding, energy work, all of those things can keep you safe when working in the metaphysical world. And I'd like to thank our eye in the sky, Brett Runehillman, for being here today. Brett?
You're very welcome. I can't wait for next week.
All right. Thank you very much. It was interesting. I like the Jupiter thing, kind of got in line with my reading this morning from the Oracle. And Kevin Baer, thank you for being
Thank you, thank you. I had a out-of-body experience when I was trying to go and connect to a past life as an animal. Came as. Thank you for that.
Yes, and remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Thank you, and blessed be, and thank you all in the chat room.